a real deal. I'll shoot your liver out and hand it to you.
What's going on, everybody? We are back again today with another Facebook interview. This one was done live, and this one was done with Alvin Ocean, fresh off of his World Pool Championships victory. I sat down with him on Facebook Live today on the 14th, for full disclosure, and we chatted all about his recent win and where his career's at and where his career's going and a bunch of other things as well. So this is going to be the audio version of that podcast. But before I jumped in there, I wanted to get a few things out of the way in the beginning. I wanted to give a huge Patreon update and shout out to Jerry Jameson, another person who has recently joined the podcast's Patreon, and with that is entered into the drawing to win himself the Propel cue, as well as the two McDermott packages, a Jeanette Lee signed cue ball, and all of the other things that you get with it, like the free Monday night lessons that I do, as well as insider news and lots of other things like the video version of all podcasts. So I see that there are a few people over on the Patreon that are just regularly watching the video podcasts now instead of partaking in the audio ones, which is pretty cool because then we actually get to talk about them a little bit more from the video aspect. So if this is something that sounds like of interest to you and you would like to join the podcast's Patreon program as well and get your entries into winning the Propel as well as the rest of those fun prizes, it will be in the description of this video, as well as we are now having our Cue It Up jerseys that are available. If you have not been paying attention to the podcast Facebook page, we have jerseys, the Ultimate Team Gear style jerseys, but these are done by In The Zone, an actual billiards company. So it's an industry inside of the pool world. So it's always nice to keep the money inside the pool world. And they are going to be making our jerseys going forward. So if you would like one or to see what they look like, you can check it out the Facebook page and check those out. It's also can be found at In The Zone Facebook page. And then on top of that, I'm going to have the link for it in the description of this podcast. So you can always go there and check it out. These things are sick. Once you see it, you're going to want one. And they're pretty decently priced. The Ultimate Team Gear stuff usually goes for about $75 to $85. And these are significantly cheaper. These are for, $65 I think is what these things go for. So pretty cheap and super high quality. So check it out there, and if you'd like one, make sure to order yourself one. I guess with those two announcements out of the way, let me get into this interview I did with your current world champion, Alvin Ocean.
Yep.
Alvin, the Hello. Champion. What is going on, man? How you feeling? Is it sunk in yet?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I had a little bit of time now at home. I'm in quarantine. Probably till tomorrow, got a test free. But of course, enjoying the time right now at home, reading all the comments and messages because there were tons of them. And of course, it's always crazy. I mean, if you look at all those comments, what the people write, it's of course nice.
And it's a slippery slope.
No, but at some point it still gives me goosebumps and let me think back of the final and just enjoy the moment even more if they write me something nice.
Yeah, of course. And when you're winning, you hope that they're nice. And when you, you're losing, you hope they're still nice, right?
I mean, out there, there are many people who just, I don't know, they're crazy sometimes, you know. They don't really respect anyone on the tour, doesn't matter what you do, but well, that's how life is, and I think that's the same with every sport.
Yeah, I think so too. So if you guys are tuning in, this is going to be a live Facebook interview done with, as you can see, Alvin Ocean right here, the now two-time world champion. And please give the stream a share if you would. help us get it out there right away before we start this interview officially. But how was travel? I guess you're back in Austria now. You said you're in quarantine. How was all that?
Well, it was all good. I think England is like a red zone country right now. So that's why it was a little bit worse to fly back home. We had to go through another country. Normally, we would go directly to Vienna. But Austria canceled all flights incoming and outgoing from to London and back. So, but it's all fine. You know, we knew already we might have to go into quarantine for a couple of days, like Joshua and P also do right now already in St. Johann at the Eurotour place. But it's okay. I mean, it's my first quarantine. I never had COVID before. It was only the lockdown. So it's nothing special anymore after that year.
Yeah. Well, as somebody who has had COVID, try not to get it. It sucks.
It's absolutely yeah, I can imagine.
So I guess let's jump right into the interview. We kind of touched on this a little bit already, but how are you feeling? I mean, has it sunk in truly yet that, you know, what you did and the ramifications of it?
Of course, in the beginning, it's a little bit weird, you know, when you just won the tournament, you give a lot of interviews, you don't really think about it. And then we're going to the room and you think, what just happened actually? And then you go out to the bar. All the players there, everyone handshake and hug and whatever. And that's where it really becomes, yeah, kind of crazy, but also nice, of course. It's an awesome feeling to win it for the second time. Yeah, I mean, it's sinking already. And I think I need a couple of more days to really get used to that feeling.
Well, you have lots of time to reflect since, you know, you're in quarantine. So,
yeah, true.
So I guess if you look at the field, it's a lot weaker maybe than it should have been or could have been if we weren't living in a COVID world. There's no players from China, no players from Taiwan. I'm not trying to, you know, take away from your win. But, you know, I think Omar's a little bit of a surprise maybe to play in the finals. Did what were you kind of thinking going into that match, knowing that you're playing against Omar El-Shaheen as opposed to maybe a Joshua or a Fedor or something?
I mean, to be honest, when I saw the second half of the bracket, I thought it's going to be like Shane versus Niels, the semifinal. And I said, I think already in the last 32, I think I said it's going to be Shane in the final.
Yeah, he was playing real strong.
It turned out crazy in the second half. I mean, I think no one had Oliver on the screen. No one had Omar on the screen. When Shane was out, some maybe thought Chris Melling would make it. And then was Omar. And then I thought Sanchez will make it because he played super strong against Oi and Carl before. So it was surprise after surprise in the second half of the bracket. And it was, crazy. I mean, to play Omar in the final, I would have never thought of. But I think he did a really, really good job in the final.
Yeah, and we're gonna talk extensively about the finals in a little bit. But let's actually talk a couple of those upsets. You had mentioned the Chris Melling. Did you happen to see the Chris Melling Omar match? Have you had a chance of looking at that yet?
I think I heard and I saw the missed nine ball from Omar to win the match 11-9. And I think someone told me Chris missed like the three ball or something on Hill.
Yeah.
But I didn't see what kind of miss and whatever. But I mean, it's can be a cruel game sometimes.
It's almost a magical run that Omar went on after missing that nine ball. I mean, the nine ball was dead straight into the hole.
Yeah.
Cue ball was comfortably off the rail. I mean, it's exactly what you dream for in a match winning nine ball. And he dogs it. And then, you know, of course, the four ball, that's the three ball or four ball. I'm not sure which one it was. I think it might have been the three ball. That Chris mess. It was a very long shot. I mean, it wasn't easy, but, you know, Chris, with the snooker background, you expect him to never really miss a pot like that. But I think it kind of set up that magical run that Omar went on to get all the way to the finals. And, you know, at one point in time, he was looking real good to win that. finals match?
I saw the semifinal where they actually both had a very shaky start, Oliver and Omar. And then I just saw on the screen like 6-1 for Oliver. So I thought, okay, maybe it's going to be an easy win for Oliver. And then he came back very strong. And I think the second half of the match, he played almost like against me in the final, I would say.
So, and let's go back to the Shane comment, because you had thought it was going to be Shane and Nils, you had said. Do you think if they wouldn't have changed the racking style, that it would have been you and Shane?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. Of course, it changed a lot. Also, I felt it when I played Mieszko. He had no break anymore. I also didn't have one. I think we both made in the, was it last six? Yeah, last 16, I think we made like three or four wing balls in the whole match because they started with the rack. So it was kind of tough. And I think Shane maybe had the same problem. But I think Shane has so many different breaks that it shouldn't be a tough battle for him, you know, because if you look at Oliver, he always did a cut break. So if that wouldn't work out, he pretty much got nothing left in his pocket. But Shane, I think he also said that he didn't play really good in that match. He never really got into his comfort zone. And sometimes it happens. I think Oliver played a very good match there.
And I might be wrong, but did Shane and Oliver play on the feature table? I don't think they did they? It was a very, very early match in the U.S., so I didn't actually catch that match until later on. And
I think they played on table 2 or 3. I don't know. I think it was live streamed on YouTube or something. Not sure.
Yeah. And we in America like to make excuses for the U.S. players, and Shane had played a lot on the feature table. And by the end of the event, I know the feature table was playing much more slippery and new, and the side tables were playing much more used because they were getting a lot more play on them. But
I think that
kind of took everybody by surprise, both in the U.S. and abroad, seeing Shane go out after, you know, the way he was kind of just running through players.
Especially against Oliver. I think no one saw there a big chance for Oliver the way Shane played the previous matches. But he's a very strong player, very solid player. I know many said at the World Cup of Pool he didn't perform well. But if you look at him at the Euro Tour, he beat many, many good players. So, of course, still no one expected to beat Shane, especially not Oliver. But I think he played
after Francisco Sanchez Ruiz, too.
Yeah, true. And also there, he played a phenomenal set. I think I saw the first half of it, and he ran out like 5 or something. So if you can work out the break well, then everything's possible.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of players, especially when they're kind of new onto the scene, they'll get a scalp like that at Shane, and then, you know, kind of have a big letdown in the next match. But Francisco Sanchez Ruiz isn't much, you know, he's not he's pretty dang tough as well, and he went right back out there and beat up on him. Maybe it was Hill. I think he was up really big and let Sanchez get back to Hill, or maybe it was 10-9. And
I think it was 10-9. Yeah, I think Oliver made two wrong mistakes. I think I saw pretty much everything from the second half of the match. Oliver played phenomenal pool until he was on the hill or something, and then it was Sanchez. He was on a run. He made like 3-4 pack or whatever. Came back really strong. But in the end, I think he missed a 4 ball or something, and that cost him the match.
Yeah. So at this point, I want to go into I have a couple of pictures here, and I want to throw them up on screen. And I want you to just take me through your thought process, what you were feeling, and what got you into this this feeling. So if you're okay with that, we can do that right now.
Yeah, sure.
All right, so here's the easy one. Let's start off with this one right here.
Yeah, that was the first World 9 Ball title. That was incredible. Against Shane in the final, I remember. Yeah, it was crazy because when the tournament started, I actually didn't feel that good, and I beat some good players. Jason in the quarters, I think Alex in the semifinal, Pegelin, and Shane in the final. Shane made some strange errors, I would say, and well, I played very solid, and I was not really nervous. I remember it was like because I already got to my goal. You know, my goal was already like okay, maybe semifinal or quarterfinal. So when I already achieve my goal, I'm feeling not really nervous anymore, and that's a really good and strong part in my game, I would say.
So now we got to ask the controversial question. So back in the Moscone Cup, I think it was the pre-match interview, you were asked the question, what do you think is lacking on Team USA? And can you tell us what your response was?
I said, they don't have a world champion.
Which is an absolute hilarious line. And I think a lot of people kind of took that as like a little bit of a dig right at Shane, right? Because I would say Shane and Sky are probably the only players that are really on that world class, you know, being able to win a world title. Can you take us through kind of that shot and what you were kind of meaning by that?
Well, it was the first time, it was the first thing that came to my mind, actually. I didn't know, and when it came to my mind, I thought, okay, that actually suits perfect, and I think it's a little bit hilarious, and it's a little bit of a, you know, shit talk, and, you know, so I think
perfectly
it was pretty
balance.
Much perfect and on the point.
Yeah, I think that was a lot of fun. I mean, I was a part of that interview. I was in the background, of course, waiting until the press was in there. And I'm glad that we didn't ask questions anytime soon because I was laughing so hard. I was laughing for about 5 minutes. Yeah. Of course, everybody loves Shane. And I'm sure.
I think they were a little bit stunned after I said it. But, well, it is what it is. It was fun.
It was a whole lot of fun. All right. So let's pull up a new picture now. Tell us what's going through your mind on this picture right now.
Oh, yeah, the missed six ball. That was, well, I can tell you what I thought after. well, of course, at the shot, I didn't think of much. Maybe I took it too easy. I don't know. Maybe didn't concentrate too much or not enough. Not sure about it anymore. But yeah, it was quite an easy miss. I think I thought until I actually stroke that I thought about playing it harder to play two rails or just roll it in with a little bit of English. But yeah, it was a bad miss, especially on 7-7. And afterwards, the only thing that came to my mind was, okay, you gotta get back into your comfort zone and refocus again. So I don't know if you saw it or others saw it that actually after that miss, I looked right on the floor.
Well hold on. Like, let's look at because here's the next picture I had in line. So tell us. So this is the picture right here that I want you to talk about next.
And that was.
I think this is exactly where you're going.
And that's actually I think the next rack.
It is.
So
yes.
I think I looked straight down on the floor for like I don't know 3 to 5 minutes. I think I just saw his break on 8-7, and then I looked back down on the floor and tried to focus. And I think there was also a timeout maybe after. So and when he made the 9-7, I just said to myself, "Okay, Omar, you're on 9, but that was your last rack." And I think from that point on, he didn't make a ball anymore.
Yeah, you ended up winning the match 13-9. So I think he had gotten to the table. And so before we go on with any more of the pictures, I want you to take us through because I think that's an interesting lead into what I wanted to talk about a little bit later, but I'm going to move it up. The only time that he really got to the table was when you were playing pushouts in the beginning of racks because for whatever reason, that four ball and you are not good friends. That thing. That four ball finds a way to hook you every single time after the break. So you had played a lot of pushouts. Take us through what you were thinking in your head when you're playing these pushouts. Did you want them back? Did you want him to take them on? What are you thinking?
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember every push out I played, but I know it was so frustrating because I made a perfect start. And then I think three, four breaks in a row, I made like two, three balls, and always the last ball came in between the cue
always
ball
the
and the one
ball
ball or two ball. And it was incredible. It was so frustrating. And he made some good shots. And yeah, I mean, push outs, it always depends. Like the very last one, I think it was 12-9 or something. There was a very easy safety available, actually, to get the one ball, two rails back up table, and hide the cue ball behind like three balls or something. And when he looked at the one ball to make it, I thought, wow, please feel free to go for it. Really, I just hope to go for it because it's like a 5 to 10% chance to make it and get position for a two ball. So, and that was a very strange decision by Omar, to be honest. But you know, I got to take it. I was happy about it because I had a shot on the one ball and ran out the rack. But pushouts in general, it's always different. You got to look at the rack. Is everything open? Can you play safety, or you want to go for it? Or sometimes I like to just get the two balls frozen together on the rail or whatever. So it always depends.
Yeah, and I think, and I don't know this, I think I'm going to bring on Omar to talk as well at some point in time in the near future, hopefully. But my guess is he took that on because he gave the previous push out back to you, and he was punished for it. So I think he kind of felt like, well, I can't do it. I can't give this guy another opportunity. I need to find a way to, you know, pop this ball and run the set. Because at that point in time, you look like you were so strong that, you know, that's just
course.
My guess.
Could
I have no
be,
clue.
No, could be, of course. But still, it was an incredible tough shot. And like I said, I would have never, ever played it. He's, I think, a little bit more of an aggressive player. And not really defensive, but you know, if he would have made it, I would have thought, wow, what's going on now? So it was a good feeling when I missed it, when he missed it, but that's cool.
Yep. All right, so let's go on to the next picture I have. So here is the next one. Take us through your mindset here.
Well, of course, in the last rack on the last balls before you win the tournament, you just want to be almost straight on every ball. You know, you want to have five stop shots to win the tournament. And when I saw the eight ball, I thought, wow, it's over. Just roll it in. And of course, it's just pure relief. You don't have anything to do on the nine ball. Just roll it in. I would have loved to jump already on the table after the eight ball, but I think that wouldn't be allowed.
It might be frowned upon.
Yeah.
As long as you don't kick the chalk into the cue ball. Poor Max.
That was crazy. Crazy.
All right, and of course the last one, we can't let you get away without seeing hearing your thoughts on this one.
Yeah, I mean that's like hard work. Pays off, you know, pure relief, super happy. Also about my performance. I think I played very strong throughout the whole tournament, and which is the funny part, that I actually changed my whole equipment right before the tournament. But that scream is just pure relief, and it was so. I had so many intense matches like Torsten, Fortunski. Omar, where actually until like 7-7, 8-8, you never knew who was going to win that match. So I had to work really, really hard to win the tournament. So it was just pure happiness.
Yeah, I think that's the great answer. All right, there's been a couple of good questions that have come in from the fans out there. So let's get those asked quickly. Oh, this is a perfect one from Lil Chris. You know, what's next for you after becoming the VG10 champion and now a two-time world champion? I know the VG10 meant a lot more to you than the world title. So maybe you can talk about how much, you know, you appreciate those.
No, of course, it was a great tournament. I really liked it. It was something special, I would say. We all had to do something in lockdowns and whatever, and COVID times. So it was nice to play the tournament, and it was a great tournament, you know. And then also the Championship League pool was super intense and crazy, I would say. Never thought after the first 3-4 days that I really could win the tournament. And then winning the world, and then actually, yeah, then we came to the World Cup of pool, which was probably the biggest upset in my career, because we were super motivated, me and Mario. And actually, after the crazy wreck we made to tie up the match 1-1, we thought, okay, it's over for them. No chance anymore. And then we came back to the table at 6-1. Then Whirlpool Masters. Yeah, I mean, Dennis played a good set. I didn't take my chances, so that's all. Fair play to Dennis. But to win the World Championships again is, of course, something crazy. And to win 2 out of 4 tournaments just means that I did something right during COVID times, and that means a lot to me.
Yep, definitely. So we're seeing another question here. What did it mean to you to have the fans back in the arena?
Yeah, I saw already the question by Sean.
You definitely were the fan favorite in that one.
yeah. Sean was also there watching, I remember. He's a great guy. And, of course, it was nice to see the fans back at the arena. I mean, there were the guys were Moscone Cup fans, you know. They're not normal guys. They're, like, special ones.
Yeah, they're very special.
Some already had a few beers. Some were really annoying, and there were like 3 guys like 20 meters behind me. They were talking all the time, moving the chairs. Then the phone rang like 2 or 3 times. So it was something you had to get used to it, but it was still a very nice feeling to finally celebrate with someone, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So there's a question in here about, after Albin's early loss, how did you stay focused, and did you change anything up about your game to help you get the win later on?
If the loss would have been different, you know, if I would have played a horrible match, then of course I would have changed something. But I think in the beginning I made a wrong, bad decision, and I got punished for it with 8 racks. So, and then I actually came back. Of course, I still didn't take every chance, but I played a good set from that point on. And the miss on the 6th ball, I think, one day I miss it, the next day I would make it. So I think there was not really much I should have thought of to change. I was just looking already forward to the next match for the losers qualification, and I played a very good set there.
And then I'm going to change this question a little bit by Morgan Lupton. But basically, are you going to be playing in the new Predator Tour in the U.S., or are you going to stick more to the European tournaments?
Yeah, well, if it's before another tournament, or, you know, like a U.S. International or U.S. Open or whatever, then, of course, I would stay there and play the tournament. Or if there are like 2, 3, 4 tournaments in a row, then I will also stay there. But just to fly there to play the Predator event, I don't think that will happen.
Gotcha. All right. So then I guess we'll ask this question, which you had mentioned that you had changed your equipment. What exactly did you change in your equipment the last, or I guess right before the event?
Yeah, the Whirlpool Masters, we had a little discussion about the cue and the weight and everything, and the shafts, also the carbon shafts. And someone made a very good point about the weight and to get more speed into the cue ball. And that was actually where it made click in my head. And I said, okay, I think that's something I'm missing many times if I'm not feeling comfortable. So I actually got back home. I didn't change the butt yet. I had the new Pantera already at home. I didn't change. So then I thought, okay, just give it a try. I put the new butt on. I took the new 12.4 carbon, and I put some weight in because normally I always played with like 17 or 17 and a half ounces, which is very light. So now I'm on 18.3.
Got you. All right. So thank you, everybody, to ask who asked those questions. And if you want to get more in, we'll do some more fan questions in a little bit. But we're going to switch back to my questions now, which you are now a two-time world champion. What do you think that does for your career as a whole? You're still very young. You're 30 years old, turning 31, I think, in a couple of months, if I'm not mistaken. Where do you think your career is at right now in the pantheon of players that are out there?
Well, I mean, those things, I don't really think about where my career is heading now or where I see myself right now. Because we all know nine ball, it can go so fast that you win or lose a match. Of course, I'm feeling great right now, but I could, I don't know, play two and I'm out at the US Open or whatever. So it doesn't really give you anything extra, you know, like extra life or whatever. It's still the same game. And of course, I think I'm in a really good shape right now. I'm feeling awesome. Of course, maybe it gives me some extra strength, you know, at the table, more confidence. But I still didn't win the US Open or the International Open, so that, or World Pool Masters. So still many goals ahead in my career. And I'm looking forward to hopefully win it.
Yeah, and I think you touched on something that you're in good shape right now as far as your game. And if you look at this year, just this year, I mean, there's nobody in the world who's accomplished what you have so far. You've won the championship, the Championship League pool, and now you've won the World Nine or the World Pool Championships. I guess going through what you've won this year and what you've won in your career, what is one thing that you're most proud of? And what is the next event that if you could just win tomorrow, that would be the one that you'd want to have?
You mean most proud of in my whole career?
Yep, so far.
Wow, good question. To be honest, I think, could be Championship League, to be honest, because I went through every stage of emotions. I was frustrated like hell, you know, on the second and third day. I was totally down. I had like zero confidence. I didn't sleep well. So I think the way I came back into the tournament and the way I won it in the end was something special to me. And I think I also learned a lot about myself. That I should just try to swallow like losses and flukes and whatever faster down, you know, not to stick with it like for minutes because it doesn't really help you. So I think I learned a lot there, and that helped me to grow, I think, and get the strength out of it.
There could be Hollywood movies written about the journey that you went on at that event. You start out the day one, you lose in the finals to, I want to say Kachi. I think Kachi made the first day's finals.
Chris.
Chris Melling. Sorry. Yep. Yeah. You lost to Chris Melling. And then, you know, you come out day two firing again. And then days basically three through five. I mean, you were one away from getting eliminated one of those days. And it just looked like you couldn't buy a roll. You couldn't find your gear. And next thing you know, you're coming into the final day. You qualify the second to last day. Give yourself one day of rest in between those. And then you just come out and just fire through the field on that last day. I mean, that's a pretty good rite of passage story.
It was a very, very special moment and very special tournament. But it was an awesome achievement. And it was crazy. And I actually needed like 1 week of recovery after the tournament when I got back home. Was incredible.
Yeah, what was it? They said you ended up playing 65 matches or
52
matches. That's woof. Yeah. That's a lot of pool.
Yeah,
it's a race to five, but that adds up fast.
Every day was like minimum 10 to 12 hours, you know, which you're in the arena and playing and hanging out and whatever, you know. It was crazy.
Yep. All right. So then what is that one event that if you could snap your fingers and win it tomorrow, what is the next event that you want to win?
Yeah, I think definitely U.S. Open.
The U.S. Open?
Because it's the biggest one we have. And to be honest, the first one where Joshua won, I actually played him in the losers qualification. No, it was one round before losers qualification. I think I lost the very first round. And then I won like 6-7 matches in a row. And I was feeling so good on the table. I had so much confidence. I think I was down like 5-1 to Joshua. And then I made like 8 racks or something. I was up 9-5. And it was such a crazy turnaround in that match. And he ended up winning against me and then winning the tournament. And I said to him, trust me, Joshua, it was so if I would have beat you, I think I would have won the tournament because I was feeling so good. So if I have to choose one tournament to win tomorrow, then US Open.
Do you think that's the toughest tournament to win? Or what do you think is the toughest tournament to win?
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's the biggest field we have with 256 players. So a lot of matches, long races. Everyone is playing there. You know, it's an open tournament. So you've got to win at least against probably 5 to 7 incredible players. So I would say, yeah, it's the toughest one.
Gotcha. All right. So if you would have asked me pre-COVID, or even going into COVID, who the hottest player in the world was, I would have had to have said Josh Filler. I thought that his game was really at the highest level. And then going into COVID, that kind of continued. And then, you know, kind of mid COVID, I would have said Fedor. I mean, Fedor was really coming on strong. And now it's really hard to say that you aren't the number one player in the world right now. I mean, the Matchroom rankings say it, and you've won 2 of the last 3 big events. Do you look at yourself now as being the best player in the world, or do you think we need to have more resume before you can comfortably say it?
I think everyone who knows pool that it's just for the day, actually. You know, on the next day, I could have lost to Omar. I think, especially in pool, to be honest, really, I think pool is the toughest sport in the world because that was a perfect example that there are so many good players on the tour that can beat everyone, especially nine ball with winner's break. I think there could have been even many more other players in the semifinal. I mean, all the players we saw in the second half of the bracket, probably many people out there from the US, they never heard of Oliver or Tomas or I don't know, whoever. So
even Omar.
I mean, there are so many good players that can play on a very impressive level and can go at least to quarterfinal at the World Championships. And I think from there on, it's just mental strength or a flip coin.
So 2 more questions about the World Pool Championships. What did you think about the new tables, the new Predator table, now that you got to play on them?
Of course, it's my sponsor, but to be honest, I think it's one of the best tables and most stable tables I ever played on. Because if I think back, I don't know any tournament where the tables didn't start to bounce after like 3-4 days when the aircon was on and off and on and off and the humidity got higher. And with the Predator table, I didn't play on any table where the cushions were bouncing or acting weird. So it's a very impressive table.
And then the last question, what do you think Matchroom getting back the World Pool Championships means for the future of the sport and the future of that event?
To be honest, I think Matchroom is the future of the sport. I think Matchroom with Predator together can change the whole pool future. I think they got the tools to do it, and I think they got the money to do it. And of course, with the television, the Zone and Sky Sports and whatever, if you have them in your back, I think it's fair to say that they can bring us the brightest future.
Is this the most, let's say, potential the sport has had in your career, you think, right now?
Definitely. I mean, we never, it doesn't matter where the World Championships was. I mean, it was always in Doha. We had live streams on, I don't know, some Arabian site or whatever. Or we had Kazum there, who also do the Euro Tour. Of course, it was nice, but Matchroom just does everything, with heart, with a lot of heart. They think about it for weeks, how to build up the arena and whatever. So everything is perfectly set up and thought through, and with the walk-ins and with the songs and DJ and commentary and whatever. So it's the, how would you say, the perfect package, what they bring.
Yeah. And I think one of the things you said there was they have the resources. I mean, they really
Yeah.
do.
No, of course,
That's
of course. Because they did something right with other sports in the past,
absolutely.
and if you look at the other sports they do with snooker and darts, boxing, so it's impressive.
All right, so let's move on. You have now locked your way into the Moscone Cup. Congratulations. We're going to get to see you
Thank
again
you.
for
Thank you.
the second year in a row. And what is this? Three out of the or four out of the last five, is that right?
Could be, yeah, I'm not 100% sure. It's crazy. I
Yes.
only played once in Vegas. My first Moscone Cup I played in Vegas. Since that, I always played in London.
Well, there's a yeah, unfortunately, we're going to be having, I guess, 2 straight years in London, and then it's going to be
Yeah.
scheduled back in London again. So who knows what they're going to end up doing with that. But
Yeah.
yeah, don't worry. We'll get the crowd chimed up for you. We'll be waiting for you. We'll see what we can do
Yeah.
to throw you off your
I'm
game a
ready
little.
for you as well.
But I will be seeing you in London this year because, of course, I go every year no matter where it's at. So what does that mean to be able to be the first player nominated for Team Europe?
Yeah, it's incredible feeling. Of course, when you're in the World Championships final, you already know what's probably going to happen with it, because the first time I won the World Championships, I also got a straight invite for the Moscone Cup. So of course you kind of know already that you booked your place, but of course it's nice to when the dust has settled, and you just get the message from Carl in the interview, it's just awesome feeling, when all that things come together, that you just won the World Championships, so you're number one, you get invitation for Moscone Cup. It's just yeah, crazy, hard to believe.
Yep. So let's put you on the spot here. Who are three teammates? I won't make you do all five, but who are three teammates you want to see representing with you?
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, Jason, MVP. I think he played the best of both teams last year. He played his heart out, played the crazy good matches. And well, then I always have to pick Joshua. Joshua, I think, has the best average game. If you know what I mean, his lowest game is so high, it's incredible. So, well, and then, yeah, I mean, of course, you got some candidates. You got always like Kachi. Of course, you got Fedor. You got Alex after he won the Whirlpool Masters in a very impressive way. You got David Niels. So those are the usual suspects, I would say. I think there's also maybe a chance for Max, to be honest. He did really good at the World Championships. I think in the end it was only the nerves that kicked a little bit too much in. So if he does good at the US Open, who knows what's going to happen.
Do you think you kind of mentioned Alex there? Alex is Alex was always my favorite player. And I just don't know why. I just always love the way that he addresses the table. Do you think that getting the win at that Whirlpool Masters is going to kind of get that monkey off his back? Because if you really look at his career up until that point, I mean, it was kind of he gets to the biggest moments, but then he loses. And it's not always because he plays bad. It's just, you know, sometimes he just gets into that moment. He just finds unique ways to lose the balls. Like, you know, when you're removing the magic rack at the Euro Tour and moves two balls when he's about to shoot, you know, the nine ball on a he finds unique ways to lose. Do you think that this is going to get that monkey off his back and he's going to be, you know, just an absolute monster going forward?
Yeah, well, of course, I hope so for him because he's a super talented player. And I think he could have been already world champion and two-time Whirlpool Masters champion if he would have better control of his nerves sometimes, because like at World Championships, he lost to Joshua and he told me he was shaking like hell and made a very bad mistake on Hill Hill. We saw the same at the Whirlpool Masters when he lost. So it's even more impressive that he came back in that way, because he wasn't playing well at the Whirlpool Masters, but the final he just played flawless, you know. But yeah, I mean, you cannot really compare Whirlpool Masters with Moscone Cup, especially with the fans back, you know. And he was playing okay. He did some mistakes. We all do mistakes at Moscone Cup because it's a lot of intensity, you know. It's crazy tough sometimes, and when you're not feeling well, it's even tougher. So I think it was all about when he was playing, I think we actually made the wrong order of play, because he played the very last match against Shane, and that was too much for him, and I think it would have been too much for many players.
Yeah,
so
I agree with that.
I think he's 100% ready to play it again and show everyone what he's actually capable of doing.
Yeah. So I think what you said there is you kind of hold your nerve. And I think there's been a couple more good fan questions that we're going to kind of tweak this one a little bit. And basically, I guess the point of this one is mostly how do you keep your nerves? Because I think when we watch you play, I think one thing that you can kind of see is you're always focused. You're always incredibly, you know, ready for the moment. How do you get like that? Especially with you know, maybe at a little bit of it earlier in your career, you struggled with that maybe.
Yeah. Well, like I said, in the lockdown time, I worked a lot on myself, with the physical strength, of course, also mental strength. I tried to do many different, breathing techniques, which I actually did after I missed a six ball, to get back on track. But it's not, but it's all also about experience. And some players are really just not made for it, to be honest. If you look at players who were really good, like Nick Vandenberg, he was an incredible player. But when it came down to like Hill, he could have missed ball in hand, you know. Because and he actually did at the Moscone Cup. I think he missed ball in hand, so he was just it was too much for him, you know. So sometimes I feel it really intense, you know. Also at the World Championships in the last rack or something, I thought, wow, my back arm is super tight now. It's super stiff. Just when I have like five stop shots. But those are the moments where you just have to believe in your confidence and in your stroke and make the best out of it.
Yep. I think, and we'll highlight Lil Chris's comment here in a second, but a little bit of backstory. I think if you look back, let's say 30 years ago, and you look at people like, you know, Johnny Archer and Nick Varner and Ralph Souquet and Niels Fine, you can kind of see that even, and Earl Strickland, you can kind of see that even then, while there wasn't the emphasis on it, those players took care of themselves pretty well physically, maybe short of Johnny. I don't know. Johnny said he's like the most lazy person he's ever met personally. So that's always a funny line when he says that he's the most lazy person he's ever met. But the rest of those players, I mean, they really did take care of themselves physically. They, you know, they worked out, they ran a lot. And I think that's a huge part of what we're seeing out of the top players now. And that is really shown through you. here's little Chris's question, basically. Take us through your physical and mental preparation that you do to get yourself ready for these matches.
To be honest, before the match or during tournaments, I don't do much. I do some exercises for my back and for my neck, you know, because I'm not getting younger. I'm doing some stretching, you know, because I also don't have the best technique, you know. I have to do a lot of stretching. I'm having like one or two massages per week when I'm back home, or physio. So that's something I really enjoy and I really need, actually, because otherwise my neck is so stiff. Like at the Moscone Cup, it was incredible. I was feeling horrible. It didn't really help anymore. And I was too, I didn't want to go to get a massage because I was so afraid of getting COVID and have to cancel the Moscone Cup that I didn't go to massage, and I just did some stretching, but it was so tightened up already and sore. You know, it was my fault. But actually, like I said, before matches, I just do stretching and try to maybe sometimes play some games, you know, to get my brain ready and my eyes ready. Nothing special, actually.
Well, I'm telling you what, Alvin, you're 1 year older than me. I'm turning 30 next year, and you're really making me scared to turn 30. That sounds awful.
Yeah, well, you're not playing that much pool like I do. So, but I see you're sitting a lot on your chair, so you should do a little bit stretching.
I know. Well, I'm stretching stretching my stomach out, so
okay,
that's helping me out.
Stretching your shirts.
That's exactly right. All right, so. One more question here. I watched actually the entire match between Jeff DeLuna and your sister. Were you able to watch that match?
I think I saw the start a little bit because I think I had to play like 1 or 2 hours later. I think I saw the start until the middle of the match. I watched.
Well, that would have been really good.
5-1 or something.
And then she's. She just started. I mean, she couldn't find it. I mean, she was missing easy positionings, easy pots. And then it gets back, I want to say 5-5. And she's just like, all right, this is done. I'm running out from everywhere again now. You know, it was a lot of the same mentality I saw out of you. Yeah. You know, you kind of, this is over. I'm not messing around anymore.
I saw the beginning. She played almost perfect, I would say. I think Jeff missed ball in hand or something, I heard. And I think I saw, and then I actually left on 5-1, and then I saw 5-5. And of course, if you look at the score, then you probably think, okay, well, I'll maybe Jeff
didn't play any better. He did not play any better the entire time.
Yeah. Okay.
He continued to struggle. Course, just,
if you didn't see the match and just the score, you think, okay, maybe Jeff's going to run away now with the score. But yeah, of course it's nice that she got back on track and won a match.
Yeah. It was a fantastic match. It really was nice. All right, so I guess I only have a few questions left for you, and then I'll let you get back to doing nothing and staring at the wall in quarantine. So
I'm watching soccer, football, so European Championships.
Oh, is Austria still in? We don't pay attention.
Yeah, to the US, they just had groups and they won yesterday. I think tonight there's another match.
Gotcha. And I saw that Scotland lost to England. Was that this morning as well? Or was that last?
No,
yesterday?
England won against Croatia, and Scotland lost just to. I actually just watched it. Who did they lose to? Czech Republic.
Oh, yeah. Maybe that was it. I just know that I got happy because Jim's team lost, and now I get to giggle at him. All right. So let's talk about a little bit more about your career as far as going forward. Do you think now that you're a two-time world champion, I mean, you're joining a very, very exclusive, we'll say group of players. Do you think that with the resume that you've built so far, with the track record you have in the Moscone Cup, as well as, you know, being a two-time champion and all of the other smaller wins that you've had, that you are now kind of in that category of all-time players where you can't really make a list of the best players without you being on it? or do you still think you have work to do there?
Of course, I think I would count me into that group, but it was a funny story about that, because I came to the bar where there was Ralph, Max, and Kareem from Predator and some other players. And I asked, I think, Ralph, because I just wanted to know how many players won already two or more World Championship titles. Because I hoped for like an answer like two or three. And then he said like six and or something. And I was like, okay, so it's nothing special. Thank you.
Well, I would still say that's pretty good.
I actually didn't know that Earl won like four.
Yeah, I think Earl won multiple. I would guess Johnny did. I have to assume that Niels, Ralph.
No, Niels only won one, actually, against me. That was his first one. Yep. Torsten won twice.
Mika won twice.
Yeah.
And I would guess that Ralph had to have won twice, maybe?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so that, I mean, is that six or is that five?
Yeah, something like that. I think he said six. Not sure.
Woohoo, I'm a billiard historian. Awesome.
No, of course, it's nice to see myself in that group, but, you know, it doesn't give me anything special, you know. It just changes my profile, I would say. In the future that I might be in the Hall of Fame or whatever. So that's more something I'm looking forward to, you know.
Yeah, I think that's I think you're building yourself a nice resume pretty quickly towards that. I think there's still maybe a little bit of work to do, but I think you're right on the line of, you know, a lot of the greatest Europeans that have came out over the last, let's say, 20 years, and Niels and Ralph and even Thorsten and Mika. I think you're right on, and Darren, I think you're right on that track right now. Of course, and you're, like we said earlier, you're still young. You're 30 years old. You still have, what do you think, maybe another 8 to 10 years of absolute prime left?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. So I guess what is actually on your radar as far as the next events coming up? I know there is a Euro Tour in Austria. I have to assume that's pretty close to you. Is that the next thing on your radar now?
Yeah, I'm leaving on Wednesday. I'm not sure if I can get any practice in before the tournament, because it's, again, with 9 on the spot. And I think the last time I broke 9 on the spot was like, I have no clue, like almost a year ago. Every tournament was 1 on the spot, so didn't really take care of it or pay attention to it, to practice it. But, you know, it's more, I wouldn't say I take it easy, you know, there. I still want to do good there. But it really doesn't matter to me if I get 3rd or 9th or whatever. I just want to enjoy the time there, because there was not really time for a little party and celebrating the win. And I don't want to be stuck at home. There's a nice hotel. They got a swimming pool and everything. So I just want to enjoy the time there with friends, family, and play a little bit of pool.
Yep. And I have to assume that you're not the only person in that that boat. I think with the International Open and then the Euro Tour are like the two big events or series of events that use the 9 on the spot. I think that's mostly it, at least from my ignorant American viewpoint. I have to assume that nobody's been playing it, so that's at least helpful.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. I mean, some players had some practice at home already, but it's a full field. It's going to be funny how many good players are going to be there, because actually many, many countries have to quarantine if they come to Austria. And actually everyone who was at the World Championships has to quarantine when they come to Austria for the Euro Tour. So it's going to be kind of strange. I think some will have some problems when they come into the country, but, you know, that's their problem, not mine.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
The joys of being from Austria. Well, I think there's enough talent just in Austria for such a, you know, pretty small country that you're still going to be grinding if you want to win this thing.
No, of course, of course. I'm trying everything I can, you know. But like I said, I mean, nine ball can go so fast, you know. We all know it. We all saw it. Sometimes 10 minutes can turn the match, and you lost it. So it's always tough to play nine ball. Doesn't really matter.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's pretty much all the questions I have. If anybody else has one out there in the comments, feel free to get it in quickly. Except for Jim, you don't get to ask any questions. You're not worthy.
Yeah.
But I guess let's give you a couple seconds here to plug your sponsors that have made your career able to, or at least help you with your career as far as getting to the point where you're at.
Yeah, well, of course, Predator Q's, they just know what's good, you know. They invest too much into pool, and I'm so thankful that I'm being part of this team. They gave me the special case, you know. They gave me, well, many, or they
Yeah,
gave
I thought I
us
was getting one of
actually.
those cases, by the way. Did it get lost in the mail? I thought I
Oh,
was getting you get one of
sorry,
those.
they probably got lost.
It must have, yeah.
Then of course they're bringing up so many good tournaments, and their relationship with Matchroom and how they build up tournaments together is just awesome. And I hope it's, and I think it's the best for the sport, and I think it's the future of the sport.
Gotcha. Is Predator the only sponsor you have?
Well, actually, no. I mean, there are some Austrian
Oh, okay.
companies who sponsor me, so, but it doesn't really matter in here, I
Yeah.
think.
Well, I was thinking about, like, I mean, if you look at a lot of the players, I mean, if you look at all the patches Shane has on his chest, he's got like he's sponsored by like 19 different countries. Where the heck is all the corporate money? Give Alvin some money, people. What's going on here?
Yeah. I mean, I think Shane won so many tournaments, and I think he won the right tournaments, and I think he's the biggest player in the US. He has many, many more followers than anyone else, I think, in Europe, because US is such a big country, and you have so many amateur players who follow him. So I think it's just better for the companies if they take him instead of a European player who got, like, I don't know, 5 to 10,000 followers.
Yeah, well, come on, Alvin, get those followers up so everybody can start giving you all their money.
Yeah.
Jim
Please.
wants to know who your other four players in the Moscone is. We already talked about this earlier, but if you want.
Yeah, I mean, you're not in, Jim, if you want to know that.
Well, everybody knows
Yeah,
that
well,
already.
like I said, I mean, the usual suspects. I think we know them already. I think Kazakis, of course, has a very big chance for Moscone Cup. Then Jason as MVP. Joshua is always there when he has to be. You have Fedor, you have Kachi, you got Niels, David. I mean, there are so many crazy names. Then, of course, you got Max, who is, like, I think, fourth now in the ranking. And I heard the first two from the ranking get a spot. So it's going to be crazy tough. I mean, I think there are one or two more tournaments for the ranking. So I'm really looking forward to see the other names for the team.
Gotcha. All right. Well, I guess that'll bring this to a close. Alvin, it's well, first off, congratulations again. It's
Thank you very much.
a two time. There's lots of people can get one time. Two time, that means you really are, that means you're really
Thank
there. You've
you.
really made it there. So
Thanks.
that's pretty impressive. I think you're a lot of people's world number one right now. You're playing hotter than just about anybody else out there. And I thank you very much for sitting down and having the conversation with me today.
No problem at all. It was a pleasure.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. And again, the two-time world champion here with you today. All right.
Thank you,
Take care,
guys.
everyone.
Bye-bye. Take care. Bye-bye.
Hey everyone, thanks again for listening. If you've liked what you've heard and you want to contribute to the future content that will be made, consider joining the podcast's Patreon at www.patreon.com/queueitup. Becoming a Patreon of the podcast will help to create all of the future content that the podcast will have. Special shout out to Dave Peters, Aaron Taylor, Pete Silsby, Morgan Lupton, Ben Young, Robert Miller, Andy Morse, and Bill Pelham for your generous contributions to the podcast's Patreon. If you ever need any more information on what the Patreon system is or how you can contribute outside of the Patreon, please reach out to the podcast or Nate himself. If you would like to contribute to the podcast for free, consider sharing any podcasts or the podcast page on Facebook itself. Also, leaving a review and a rating if you listen through iTunes. It helps others find the podcast. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back soon with another episode of the Cue It Up podcast.